You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Simon Rios. Some of the world's top classical guitarists will be in the city later this month for the 18th Boston Guitar Fest. It's the first year back to full in-person capacity since the pandemic. And that's a recording of one of our guests today here in studio, Elliot Fisk. He and Saida Meneses, who's also here, sitting on either side of me with their classical guitars in their laps. They're the festival co-founders. They're luminaries in the classical guitar world, educators at New England Conservatory, and they're both here with their axes. Thank you, Elliot and Saida, for joining us today.
Yay. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. Elliot, I want to start right away with that piece we just heard. It's one of your recordings, the Notre Dame Blues.
Correct.
It has a kind of bluesy style, and it uses a lot of the techniques of more traditional classical playing. Tell us about it.
Well, that piece is a result of a long collaboration I had with the wonderful American composer George Rochberg. The interesting thing about Rochberg is he began his classical music career as a composer of very difficult atonal music, and following the tragic death of his wonderful son prematurely, he decided that he didn't want to write any more just in that idiom and expanded to more, let's say, popularly accepted forms and a tonal language that would refuse to just kowtow to the proclivities of a small elite. And so he aimed to reach a bigger audience, but keeping the discipline of art music.
Okay, so repopularizing the classical guitar, which was a popular instrument at its beginnings. Saida, you've talked about the classical guitar as having kind of an outsider status in the world of classical music. What do you mean by that? Is it because the guitar isn't exactly an orchestral instrument?
Well, I mean, the guitar has so many possibilities. Unbelievable. Like, we have this beautiful instrument that creates amazing colors, and we can have, you know, harmonics and all this tremolo and beautiful technique. And I'm just fascinated by the instrument.
Harmonics. Yes. Can you show us?
Sure.
And then the other one that you mentioned
and
was
then the tremolo,
tremolo,
which I'll play a little bit.
Recuerdos de la Alhambra.
Yeah.
Of course. That's a classic. And this was part of the reason why you started this festival back in 2006 was to bring this music back to the fore.
Yes. Well, we really started in our kitchen. I think we had a lot of wonderful, you know, parties with Professor Elliot Fisk, who teaches at New England Conservatory. And I also had the performance class, and we invited the students, you know, to play at our home. And we prepared this Mexican, because I'm from Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
I love
Veracruz.
Doing, of course, Veracruz. Yeah. So I love cooking guacamole and all the salsa. And so the students will have like a friendly environment where to share the music. And that's how the festival started. 18 years ago, where they needed a space where to perform more in a friendly atmosphere. And so one day we said, like, why we don't just do a festival? And sure, why not? Just like an extension of our kitchen, we just built this festival at the NEC, at the New England Conservatory, and now we are having two new venues, which are very exciting. Maybe Elliot can talk about that.
Please, Elliot, yes.
Well, we decided to go over to East Cambridge, and we were very attracted, first of all, by the Multicultural Center, which seemed to be a real community-based place, and it was also a site that had been sort of re-envisioned from its original purpose and repurposed to be just what the name says, a multicultural center.
It looks gorgeous from the pictures, by
well,
the way.
It's, yeah, it's a beautiful place, and we'd like the feeling of accessibility. But we were going to need more rooms than there were there. And so the Multicultural Center people put us in touch with the Foundry right up the street, six blocks up the street, which is a marvelous, another reimagined place. And it's perhaps appropriate that the theme for this year's festival is transformation. So we're transformed, moving out of NEC, and we're moving into two transformed places.
Moving out of a pandemic, too.
Right.
Yeah.
We got a pandemic, too. Yeah.
All right, let's get a little preview of the festival, not in words, but in music.
Yeah.
You're going to play something for us?
Yeah, I'll continue, you know, with Recuerdos de la Alhambra, which you beautifully say it. And this is written by Francisco Torreca. Just a little, you know, a collapse of 1 minute, maybe.
Okay, Saida Meneses, festival co-founder. Criminal to interrupt such beautiful playing. Yeah, keep going.
No, it's okay. I love talking too. Yeah.
This has to be one of the most beautiful songs, compositions ever written. Francisco Tárrega, Spanish composer.
Yes, and we'll continue this music and all the wonderful repertoire that we have on June 27th at the Foundry. And from June 27th to July 2nd, we have all the information about our evening concerts at www.bostonguitarfest.org.
Thank you for that. Elliot, I want to bring you in as well. Just changing gears a little bit, I want to talk about your beginnings. As I understand it, you grew up in the Philadelphia area in a Quaker family, which isn't what I equate most automatically with classical guitar. How did you come upon this instrument and this type of playing?
Well, as you mentioned, I had the good fortune to grow up in a Quaker cocoon in Philadelphia, in the Philadelphia area. And I was very fortunate to grow up in an integrated community, to go to integrated schools, and to basically grow up inside of my best friend up the street who happened to be African-American. So I grew up inside an African-American household at a very privileged sort of window in American history. We're part of, the rebellion for human rights in America and the opposition to the war in Vietnam and all of that. But it's the real formative event in our own family was the birth of my brother, who was 3 years younger than myself and was born with Down's syndrome. So at that time, America wasn't particularly great at dealing with people with that kind of challenge. And so my mother thought, well, one thing we can do as a family is we can get a guitar into the household and sing songs. And the coming of the guitar, we'd all be able to do that. Well, that never happened, but the guitar did enter the family. And I began to play when I was about 7, and I was still fooling around with the guitar after about 3 months. And then my parents took me to a teacher who happened to be a classical teacher. And as they say, the rest is history. So.
And you end up studying with Andrés Segovia, who's the great godfather of it all.
Sort of the Einstein of the classical guitar. And
after Tárrega, but...
No, Segovia was, of course, a revolutionary figure. And literally 12 years after that first conversation where my mother asked me, would you like to have lessons? And I said, "Who will have money for lessons? We can't afford that." Anyway, we managed to afford that. And 12 years after that question was asked to me by my mother, I was sitting in Segovia's hotel room in New York, sitting closer to him than I'm now across the table from you and playing to him. So that was a wonderful odyssey.
My parents saw him in Boston. Must have been in the 80s. And they could see how big his hands were. Just from the audience. Saida, you were one of the youngest winners of a major music competition in Mexico when you were just 17 years old.
I know.
Tell us about how you came to the guitar growing up in Veracruz.
Well, you know, I wanted to play the violin, but we couldn't afford it. So we always, you know, everybody, of course, and I think I'm sure here in Boston as well, in Mexico, we had a guitar always in a corner, you know. And so that's how my parents asked me, hey, would you like to give it a try? And I thought, sure, why not? And I just immediately, it was a love first sight. I love holding the guitar on my arms because it feels like I'm hugging, you know, the wood. The wood is next to my chest, to my heart. So my heartbeat always is next to the wood, and it's just beautiful feeling. So yeah, as a female, you know, guitarist in Mexico, which is an instrument, the classical guitar is mainly dominated by male, it was a little bit challenging for me. You know, I didn't know how, like, what to follow or how to even dress up, you know. I felt a little bit uncomfortable at times because I thought, oh, maybe I should just wear pants. I know it sounds like a silly thought, but, you know, these things, when you are on stage, to feel secure with yourself, like to feel comfortable with yourself, I didn't have an image. So my only model images were singers and violinists. So they always wearing these gowns. And so I thought, oh, maybe I could just give it a try, you know. So I was very much in a very friendly environment. All my colleagues were men, and they were very supportive of me. And my teacher, he's wonderful as well. We have a great friendship until now. And so it was a beautiful, you know, it's a culture. In Latin America, you know, the music schools are free. And so this is why we want to create with this festival. We want to be able to offer affordable, you know, lessons for everybody who wants to try the classical guitar. And the classical guitar is a wonderful instrument that everybody can learn how to play at any age.
Saida Meneses, co-founder of the Boston Guitar Fest, Elliot Fisk, festival artistic director and co-founder. Elliot, you've said that to be a classical guitarist, you have to be a mathematician and an Olympian. What is meant by that?
Well, let's start with the second part of that question. People probably see a guitar, they think, okay, you strum it, it's fairly, you know, cut and dry and easy. But in fact, the classical guitar is an extremely sort of complicated variant of the guitar family. And what we're dealing with is a split-second perfection of coordination between the two hands. The two hands do completely different things. The right hand plucks, meaning each finger has to be perfectly synchronized with some finger in the left hand, which is doing something completely different. So you could describe the classical guitar as the right hand, the plucking hand, is like a harp, maybe, and the left hand is sort of like a cello. So you've got to negotiate two completely different instruments at the same time. So that's the sort of part of the physical demands of the instrument. And basically, I tell my students, you know, we're Olympic athletes, not for 20 years, but for 60 years, as long as we live. You know, Segovia, of course, was playing until he was 94. Mm-hmm. And it's not uncommon amongst musicians. And even classical guitarists keep going, you know, for quite a while. So this is the sort of the physical athletic side of the guitar. And as far as the mathematical side, well, the complications for the brain of doing all the different things that you have to do at one time to be a guitarist are immense. We're playing music that's in various, you know, what we call polyphonic music in various parts. So it's as if you are with one person playing the part of four people at the same time, negotiating these crazy positions because the guitar can play the same note in six different places. So if you do the math on it, you know, the possible permutations of fingerings, which each fingering relates to a certain kind of imagined orchestration. Segovia always said the guitar is like a miniature orchestra. He said it's like an orchestra seen from the opposite end of a telescope. Mm-hmm. So a miniature orchestra. So we're trying to imagine all these orchestral.
What do you mean colors. By that? So you have like trumpets on.
Well,
on
you
one
have
end?
Different like. That kind of contrast, the exact same scale, right? You can get a different sound. And then Rascal, of course, which we use in the flamenco.
Wow.
Many, many different kinds of colors. Or the flesh sound, like this, which is why I'm playing with.
That's when you play a piano, you can just, you get like one tone.
Well, the great pianists don't. The great pianists can make you think you're hearing a vibrato. You know, the Horowitz could do that, right? But on the guitar, we literally do have the vibrato. You know, this kind of a little wiggle at the end of the note that makes it sweeter. So
it's not quite campfire strumming or guitarra playera, as some say. There's like a whole spectrum,
right?
That it's a very democratic instrument, where anybody can pick it up and learn a couple chords and learn to sing some songs,
yeah.
And then you can take it to these incredible levels. Saida, can you touch on that a little bit? Like,
yeah.
The difference between what your left hand on the fretboard is doing and your right hand you have to coordinate these.
Yes, and it also helps like in the daily, everyday's life. Like for example, you know, the coordination that the effort that we have to put in the coordination between both hands also helps with our creativity and the way we administrate, because we have to put so many hats. And we do not only perform on stage, we also become administrators, you know. So this also helps.
Managers.
I know everything. Thank God we have Sue O'Clair who helps us with the publicity. Hey, hello.
Thanks to Sue.
I know, we love her. We love her. So, yeah, but, you know, these all these details, because we have to be very, like a surgeon. We are not surgeon, thank God, but, you know, almost. Like, we have to be that precise. And, you know,
you have to hear each note.
Exactly.
Like, that's not always easy.
Exactly. So I'm preparing, for example, the Aranjuez Concerto that I'm playing next month. And, you know, this sounds like very kind of easy strumming, but just to be precise takes a lot of, you know, because I have to shift the hand, left hand, on time, so I do staccato. And then the forte, when it comes forte. And all this dynamic, so I have to be in coordination with both hands, and of course the following with the orchestra. It's a beautiful concerto, by the way. Yeah.
How do you connect this highly skilled music that you're playing? How do you open it up? It sounds nice that it's a democratic instrument, and you want people from all areas of the guitar world to have access to this kind of music. But how do you actually do that?
Well, it all comes, I think, from inspiration. You know, I think we all get inspired by our mentors, and I certainly do get inspired by Professor Elliot Fisk, who is an unbelievable teacher, and he's constantly mentoring the students. So, and I also get inspired by the young artists. Like, we have this competition coming up at the festival, and the finalists are 4 finalists, and so I get inspired by them. You know, I hear them play so beautifully, and we just go back to our room and practice as much as we can with a lot of patience, for sure, and to be good to ourselves, because a lot of the times being a musician can be, you know, also overwhelming. So we have to learn how to be forgiven, because we never know what's going to happen. Like the other day, I had a concert with Maestro Leo Brouwer on stage, and at the end of the concerto, you know, I was performing a concerto with orchestra, and my nail popped up at the very end of the last strum.
Nail popped
off? Yes, because we...
You have artificial nails that you use?
I wear fake nails.
Because they break. Nails break.
Exactly. Yeah. So I had to deal with that, you know, and I had to just keep on going and play and do my best. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, I want to hear some of this. Yeah. And as I understand it, are you going to play?
Well, I thought I would send us off with a little bit of Bach.
Elliot Fisk.
This is from the first cello suite.
Take it away. And tomorrow, Governor Maura Healey joins us for her monthly check-in. We're going to talk about everything from her push for more affordable housing to what she's been hearing from the state's Latino community through her statewide listening sessions. We want to hear from you. What do you think we should talk about with the governor tomorrow? Any questions or feedback for her that you have, you can share all of it by joining our text club. To get started, text the word Boston to 617-766-0382. That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Simone Rios. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston. Thank you. Bravo.